The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Thanks for being with us. We will have John Wilner here shortly on Arizona State and them not going to the postseason and all of that. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is, as always, Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their ongoing support. Diamondbacks, Dodgers, huge series. Diamondbacks doing it against Cincinnati over the weekend. Very pleased to see them take three or four from the Reds. Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly start the first two games against the Dodgers. Let me get over to, because I want to give Wilner some extra time here, so I'm just going to make it brief. And I'll get further into my comments on the ASU bowl situation, bowl ban. When you self-impose, that means you know that there is something bad that is out there. When you self-impose and classes have already started for the seniors, so they have no choice, they can't just bail out. When you self-impose and it's the week of the first game, like actually Tuesday game week because the game is on Thursday, when you self-impose, it means your situation at beloved Arizona State University for some of you is worse than Tennessee, which just came down earlier this summer. When you start hearing terms like show cause, and I'll explain, have John Wilner explain what show cause is, and that there's going to be some of that. When it comes down that the NCAA hasn't even ruled yet, they could say, we'll throw another year bowl ban on you. We'll take away this. We'll fine you that. We don't know. When you're Kenny Dillingham and you're in your first year and you've already had some things that have happened from my view that kind of tilt the head and say, boy, now I know why this place is so bleeped up. When you're the one that says, oh, Ray's got to go. Like, okay, and water's wet. He's not going anywhere unless, A, he resigns, retires, or Crow retires. And I don't see Ray resigning. Like, by now, you would think that he would just say, you know what, I don't need this anymore. I don't need this anymore. It's pretty clear that he was taking care of Herm. The fact that Herm got paid, the fact that we see Herm on ESPN and Antonio Pierce coaching in the NFL, and this thing is just burning. This thing's a dumpster fire, and I'm being kind. And yet there's still people like, oh, well, you know, the NCAA has an info. No, when you cheat, you cheat. And it was pretty evident, just things I was hearing through the months, when Ray says what AP says is what I say. And I've heard that from a bunch of people that are no longer at ASU, that was the mentality. You know, I've never seen something quite so dysfunctional. And there's a lot of dysfunction here in the Valley in professional sports. Think of some of the awful teams or franchises that we've had or owners that we've had or have. And think of what's going on at Arizona State. It'd be nice to not have scandal. It would be nice to not have to look at things and tilt your head and say, really? You're going to tell me that you've got it all figured out? And so I feel bad for Kenny Dillingham. I feel bad for the assistant coaches. I have to believe that this trust now with Kenny has to be rebuilt. He's not even been here a year, and they just show up Sunday morning at 6:30 and drop a bomb on him. Those players can't transfer out because classes have already started. This could have been done. They should have never gone to play Wisconsin. And I talk about it, I write about it, and I get this from ASU. Oh, you're wrong. You just have it out for us. You don't know what you're talking about. Really? I get it. You got a paycheck. I understand. You're on the pension and paycheck program. You just want to protect your backside, and everything's great. Everything's hunky-dory. It's everybody else's fault. And here we are. John Wilner is next. Stay with us. John Wilner to kick off the week. A Monday with John. Of course, you can check out all of his content. Wilner Hotline. And it's the start of the games this week. We're so looking forward to that. And then yesterday morning at 6:30, Arizona State's like, not so fast. Let's drop a bomb on Kenny Dillingham and the entire program. So, John, we could do an hour on what a bleep show it is over at Arizona State University. We could easily I could run with that. But you're the guy, the national voice, you cover the Pac-12, you have a much clearer lens. I'm just sitting here in the Valley seeing it from a distance. What do you make out of Arizona State football and them pulling the bowl game on this team?
Deplorable, unconscionable. I mean, It is any other school and any other administrative duo besides Michael Crow and Ray Anderson, and I would be speechless. But this is, you know, this fits with everything else that's happened there since the fall of late fall 2017 when they hired Herm Edwards. It is a unfortunately for Dillingham and his players, the innocent players, it's very fitting end to this tale in a lot of ways, right? I mean, unless there is something that they haven't told us, they have put Anderson put his friendship with Herm Edwards above what was best for the program, the players, the new coach, all of it. There's no other conclusion to draw. They should have done this bowl if they thought a bowl ban was needed, and that's an entirely separate topic. Mm-hmm. Given the precedent the NCAA set last month in the Tennessee case, you could really argue that it's moving away from bowl bans because it doesn't want to punish innocent players. Right. And so here's ASU applying a bowl ban. So, it's just, it is really, really on brand for Anderson and Crow. That's the bottom line.
Okay, so on brand is, for some reason, Michael Crow just doesn't care about football. Or basketball, really. He just keeps going back to Olympic sports, which I'm a fan of Olympic sports, but most people don't care. That's unfortunate. That's just the society we're in. Big cigar boosters don't really care. And so the idea of firing Ray or Crow resigning has been down here. This is not an old take. This is 3 years. You know, John, if they had just said, we're not going to go play Wisconsin in the Vegas Bowl, and Herm, you're fired. If they had just done that, none of this that we're sitting here talking about, you and I have been doing this now coming up on 3 years. And the idea that it's the same old nonsense and nobody of accountability down here, nobody in that front office, when it was pretty clear to even people like myself that cheating was rampant and we were calling them out, nobody's been let go. And so it just goes back to Crow doesn't care and Ray's got his gig. I thought Ray initially was a really good hire, wrote it, talked about it. I did some really good things early on. Even the Herm stuff, the first couple of weeks, it's like, okay, if he gets the right assistance, he's going to be fine. The guy that's been left out of all this is Antonio Pierce. And so from that point on to where we are today, the damage hasn't stopped. So that's my little rant. I'm going to get to a question now after all that with you.
This is a very rantable situation. I totally understand.
Yeah, yes, I could keep ranting. Okay, is this shaping up to be the worst of the worst when it comes to NCAA penalties and infractions? Because Tennessee was not given a bowl ban. I'm hearing this could be and probably is worse than Tennessee. What are you hearing?
Well, that is the conclusion to draw, right? Tennessee was one of the most egregious cases the NCAA has ever adjudicated. And it ended up fining the school $9 million. You know, the coach had been fired. So they got hit with a pretty hefty fine, but again, no bowl ban. So that tells you that ASU believes its case is even worse than Tennessee's, you know, and that's certainly what has been the indication all along since the first reports. That was what, June of 2021. I mean, it's been forever, except on the Arizona basketball timeline. This one has been forever. It probably is worse than Tennessee's, which means it is at the peak of NCAA scandals, and which begs the question, okay, if they knew that, then why didn't they impose a postseason ban last year or the year before? Right. Why didn't they fire Edwards before, you know, week three of last season? It doesn't make sense unless you view it through the lens of Ray Anderson protecting his buddy and his buddy's bank account and his buddy's reputation. And then everything makes a little bit more sense.
Hmm. What penalties? Okay, I'm going to get real specific on some of this stuff. Financially, yeah, they could throw a big dollar figure at Arizona State. What else could they do? Arizona State's already... They've self-imposed on scholarships the last few years, and they haven't put that out there, which I don't know why. One. Two, what possibly beyond dollars now could the NCAA do to them? Because this isn't the time of SMU.
No, it's not. And you would think that they're going to stick with their the NCAA will stick with its ruling on the Tennessee case and not apply a postseason ban. But it's, I guess it's possible if this is bad enough that they could add another year of a postseason ban, which would be, you know, beyond the scope of what we have seen recently. A fine for sure. Additional scholarship reduction, things that hurt the recruiting process, right? I mean, those are really the levers at its disposal at this point. I don't know the details of the scholarship reductions and how long they're in place, you know, campus visits, all those kind of things that go into the roster building process. They could all be, you know, in jeopardy with the NCAA. And it'll also be very interesting to see how the NCAA handles the fate of the current players. You know, could the seniors this year get an eligibility waiver so they can play somewhere else next year? Will anybody be given free transfers like the Northwestern players got after this, you know, the hazing scandal? So a lot to be sorted out at the NCAA level, and there's a lot to be sorted out at ASU's level. And I don't know that we'll ever get answers from Crow and Anderson, because they could just maintain radio silence this whole time.
Yeah, I mean, the belief down here is Crow's going to retire in the next year or maybe 2 years. Okay, the damage is already done. To have a president who is not engaged at all, I mean, so what, he shows up at games or skates around, shows up unannounced at a practice a couple of weeks ago when there's just very friendly media that's going to be there and very few media, so he's not pushed up against the wall. There's a lot of strategy going on down here from my view on how they're going about this. The idea that they announce this after classes have already started is just, to me, another layer of, like, let's wait until these kids are in school, then they can't bolt.
It's insidious. I mean, that's exactly right. It seems like, I don't know what the other explanation would be other than that they wanted to wait and tie these players to the roster this season, because if they came out with this, you know, previously, everybody would have left and they'd have no season. So it seems to be just insidious, and we'll see if any clarity comes. If I'm one of these seniors, I'm lawyering up right now and I'm trying to get answers.
Yeah, because unless, and I'm not trying to justify this, unless they were told 48 hours notice, this is coming, 72 hours notice. And even then, they should have been way out in front of us. That's the only way I can imagine, because I was at the kickoff luncheon on Friday, and it was the usual kickoff luncheon for the most part. Rah, rah, everything's going to be great, new coach, so on. But Ray got up and spoke, and there's just a tone of Ray that was, the shoe's going to drop on something else. And, you know, and so the shoe drops at 6:30 on a Sunday morning. Hey, Kenny, Gene Boyd and I need to meet with you. And so for Kenny Dillingham, yes, it's in his contract. He's going to get an extra year or two tagged on. These assistant coaches, though, John, what do they do about not going to a bowl game this year? That's money. That's $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 per each assistant coach because of this.
It is. I mean, they know that is, you know, that's an iffy proposition. We don't know if ASU would have been to a bowl game, but certainly they have got, I mean, for the whole staff, especially for Dillingham, it undermines your faith in the university and administration. And I mean, I know how deep Dillingham's ties to that school go, right? It's part of his DNA, but at the same time, he's got to be shaking his head and saying, I don't want to work for these guys. I don't trust them. Why should I have any faith that they're going to do what's best for the players? Because Dillingham has been selling these players, you know, the runs that returned and the newcomers, you know, come here. We're building a culture. This is the best place for you to thrive. And now he gets this bomb dropped on him, and it undermines what the players have been told by the head coach for the last 7-8 months. I saw his post-practice gaggle with the media yesterday, and he was spitting blood, and I don't blame him one bit.
Yeah.
He was hung out to dry by his administration.
He was emotional. Brutal. I mean, he looked like he had shed a couple tears.
It's just brutal that they did this to him. And again, what is the explanation? Maybe the NCAA told them 72 hours ago, hey, here's the situation. But they had the evidence months ago. They had the evidence a year ago, right? Right. They had former assistant coaches trying to give evidence to the NCAA. Right. Everybody has known for 2.5 years that this was a bad, bad deal. Yep. Why did they wait? If not to protect Herm Edwards, if not to lock in these players to this season, why did they wait? That's the question.
Okay, I'm hearing the term show cause down here, and fans may not know what show cause means. Do you want to get into that, or you think that's a little over the top? Because that's going to be a new term that I think is going to come out for some of these former assistant coaches that were here.
Could be. I mean, show cause is the most serious penalty the NCAA can apply to a head coach or assistant coach. It basically prevents them from getting hired within the NCAA structure for any number of years, right? I mean, it is for big time bad deals. And it forces them really to seek employment outside of college sports as a coach and high school or the NFL. And I don't know how, you know, I would think Antonio Pierce is going to get a show cause, but Antonio Pierce is in the NFL and he could probably make his living there. So, and Herm Edwards, he's back doing his thing, chit-chatting on TV. He doesn't care. That's the thing. Ray Anderson, he's getting $1 million a year. He's got 2.5 years left on his deal. He can retire. There's no accountability for anybody who caused this problem, and yet the victims are entirely the innocent. It's just awful. You feel so bad. You know how I feel terrible for Washington State and Oregon State because of what's happened to the Pac-12, right? Getting left behind, scrambling to figure out their existence. That is the same pit in my stomach I feel for ASU's players and for the coaching staff, frankly, because they have been handed this terrible hand by the administration no accountability whatsoever.
Yeah. It's embarrassing for sure. The NCAA does not need to say our investigation is closed. Our investigation is ongoing. The NCAA is not going to comment on any of this stuff. So we have to assume every day, this is the next day a bomb could be dropped on the program, right?
We have no idea. It could take another 6 months. It could take another year. We have zero idea. They have not received the notice of allegations. And that is, you know, begins the final step of the whole thing. Don't know when it's going to come. But the thing is, now it's going to be very difficult for whatever the NCAA does to top this, for sure, which is why schools do this kind of thing or have done them in the past, right? Arizona self-imposed an NCAA tournament ban a few years ago during the NCAA investigation. But the landscape has changed. It changed last month with the Tennessee ruling. You wouldn't think a bowl ban was coming. And yet here ASU is doing self-imposing, which means the allegations are incredibly serious, which means, well, why didn't you do this before? Right. Why did you let Herm Edwards coach? He came back to coach in 2021 and 2022. Yeah. It is just astoundingly incompetent administrative work by Ray Anderson and Michael Crow.
John's veins are bulging, so I'm going to move off this because I don't need to be around.
I feel terrible for the players and for Dillingham.
I know.
The guy puts everything he's got into ASU.
Yes. We have games. Okay. I have to ask you, how does Cal travel to North Texas? How does that...
Yeah,
that's one of the games this week that's on the schedule. And it's, you know, Portland State plays at Oregon. And there's two parts to this. One, I do want to know how Cal ends up traveling to North Texas. But two, you know, games like this, Arizona State's going to play Southern Utah. U of A is going to play NAU. Are those games going to have to go away for these programs wanting to aspire to be in the top 50, 60? We've always talked about how these games support all other athletic departments. And I get that. They're sacrificial lambs. But do those games eventually have to go away with the direction that we're trending in the CFP, John?
You know, I think schools are going to continue to apply what's most called the ABC scheduling technique. So if you have three non-conference games, you got one against a Power Five, you got one against a Group of Five, and then you got one against the FCS, right? Whether it's Southern Utah or, you know, Montana, Sacramento State. I think that schools are going to still schedule those C-level games, and the money's there. The FCS schools are going to take them because they need the money. and the coaches want them because they want to have one guaranteed non-conference win, right? One easier game to kind of ramp up to the heart of your schedule. So my guess is that they will remain in place. We will see over time how the new playoff structure with 12 teams and five or six at-large bids, we'll see how that impacts the non-conference scheduling. But I don't see any obvious signs that these are going to disappear soon.
How does Cal go to North Texas, John? Do you have a thought on that?
Well, it's a home and home series, and Cal just figured, you know what, we can get a couple games in. North Texas will come to Berkeley. We'll go there. You know, it does give Cal exposure in Texas for recruiting purposes, which I'm sure was part of it. But it's a dangerous game. The non-conference, those road games against the Group of Five, whether it's Conference USA or the MAC, the American, the Mountain West, playing those teams on the road is a dangerous proposition for Pac-12 schools. So we'll see how Cal does. I think that'll be a difficult game. Yeah, and Cal also plays Auburn at home. So they have a pretty tough non-conference schedule.
No, I mean, Stanford this week travels to Hawaii. That's a game that, as a former play-by-play voice of San Diego State, I know that's a grind. That's not an easy trip. It's not, this is all waves and sunshine. You got to get through that. Boise State's at Washington. What do you like? What do you think? Boise State at Washington, John.
Certainly one of the best games of the first week for the Pac-12, right? Both teams have returning quarterbacks. Boise State's picked to win the Mountain West. Washington is my pick to win the Pac-12. I think it could be an exciting game. High scoring for sure. Boise State's got a real good offense. But, you know, I kind of feel like at some point in that second half, Washington's going to just be too much for them, right? Grind them down and come away with the win. But that would be on the small group of games to circle for this week. The Pac-12 doesn't have one of those, you know, Utah, Florida is certainly a big game, but it's Thursday. There's no Saturday Labor Day weekend spectacular like Washington against Auburn or Oregon against Georgia that we've had in many previous years.
Do you think Colorado at TCU, that this is nothing more than all the pizzazz and hype for Deion and they just get steamrolled?
I don't know if they'll get steamrolled. I really don't. You know, I'm not sure how good TCU is going to be. They lost a ton of guys from their magic season. So we'll see. Certainly be very interesting to see how Deion Sanders, you know, handles the coaching at this level, how Shedeur Sanders, the quarterback, handles the defenses at this level. But I don't necessarily view that as a marquee trajectory framing game for the Pac-12, because I don't think Colorado is going to be that good, and I'm not sure how good TCU is going to be. But certainly just for the optics of the Deion debut, there, and it's on Fox at 9 a.m. Pacific. It's got a lot of hype.
I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time and insight as always. Thanks, John.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
There's John Wilner. Wilner Hotline. Terrific content day in and day out. John puts out on his socials. We carry it over on sports360az.com, and we're back with more after this timeout. All right. So happy to have Kalen Jones pop up on my Zoom, because Kalen is a Sun Devil, and Kalen probably has an opinion or two about what's going on over at Arizona State and the bleep show that's happening there. Kalen is with The Messenger. We've had Kalen on through the years as he has grown throughout his platforms. And first and foremost, it's awesome to see you. One, two, what is The Messenger for people that are saying, that's where Kalen is now? How do I find him? What are you doing?
Well, Brad, it's great to be joining you. It's been a while. I'm glad to be able to chat with you. And if you are looking to find my stuff, The Messenger is a startup, is a new news site. They primarily cover news, but they are launching a sports vertical literally this week, officially, I believe, that it's coming under wraps. So we are still building out our sports staff, but I cover both college football and the NFL. So if you're looking for my NFL college football content, make sure you check out themessenger.com.
There you go. Pretty simple, straightforward. All right, college football content. You're a proud Sun Devil alumni. I don't know if you're writing checks to them yet or not. What do you make out of what is going on over here with the bull ban and everything happening around the Sun Devil football program?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I feel bad for the players and even the coaching staff, right? Like, I feel bad for, I think it's the 20 plus seniors who, you know, found out the week before they ended up playing their season opener that they won't be playing for an opportunity to play in a bowl game. And I know that, you know, in our current college football landscape, you know, there's not as much put in the bowl games, but I think for the fan base, I think for players, I think for coaches, it's validation that you're working towards something and it's a goal to be able to be achieved. I feel bad for those players on Arizona State that won't be able to say that they are pushing towards or working towards a goal this year, because clearly they're in a rebuilding mode in their first season under Kenny Dillingham, who I also feel bad for. I mean, he inherited a situation that, you know, he wasn't responsible for. This is something that Arizona State should have dealt with previously, prior to, you know, his arrival, prior to his hiring. And it's unfortunate that, you know, from the perspective that I have out here, is that, you know, athletic director Ray Anderson and, you know, Michael Crow, the fact that they didn't decide to handle this in a similar manner to Tennessee, where you had a much quicker, cleaner, you know, reaction and self-imposing of whatever penalties and bowl bans that you're going to have on your program, and ultimately punish people that shouldn't have to bear, you know, the responsibility of also having to speak for, you know, these, you know, quote unquote crimes against the program, in addition to having to suffer not being able to play in a bowl game. So I feel for those who are a part of the program right now, and I do question the leadership right now and their decision making.
Okay, that's who you feel for. Who do you not feel for? And I'm going to put it in these terms. Journalistically, you have one lens. As an alum, you have another. Can you separate the two? Who do you not feel bad for in all of this?
Well, I don't feel bad for Herm Edwards and Ray Anderson, if I'm being completely honest here.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, you know, having worked for History Channel, like I've learned that a lot of the times, you know, those lines that we see next to, you know, stats and in record books and stuff like that, you know, there's not context that's given there a lot of the time. And so I feel like as time goes on, there might be, you know, 20, 30 years from now, kids who look back and say, oh, Kenny Dillingham's first season, the Arizona State wasn't in the bowl, I wonder why. There won't be a demerit against Herm Edwards', you know, reputation. There won't be a demerit against Ray Anderson's reputation. It'll just say Arizona State missed out on a bowl. And so the people who ultimately are culprit won't be looked at and viewed that way, maybe by the Arizona State fans and maybe by people who, you know, obviously know college football history and understand, you know, bowl bans and penalties and stuff like that. But I don't feel bad for them, because this is a way to essentially whitewash or sports watch, whatever you want to define it as, like, how they will be viewed historically. And I feel bad for Kenny Dillingham, because again, this is a really good opportunity for him to build something and start something and, you know, galvanize this team. We're going to work towards getting a bowl. And now you have that stripped away from you. And I'm curious to see, like, how much patience is extended to him, you know, moving forward, since you're having, instead of a year zero, you're getting like a year negative one.
Yep. No, that's a good way to put it. Kalen Jones with us. He's with The Messenger. Kalen, very popular when he's been on with us, and he's moved over to a new vertical that launches this week. Check out themessenger.com. Pretty straightforward.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yep, themessenger.com.
All right, check out themessenger.com. All right, let's flip over to the NFL. So you're coming into a season. You're still in L.A. I'm guessing you're based in L.A., right?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So what is going on with Matthew Stafford and the Rams? And I guess the bigger question is, if we're looking at the NFC West, obviously what's going on over here, they're at the bottom of the totem pole. Can you separate Seattle, San Francisco, and the Rams? Is it that straightforward to you?
I think so. I even with Matthew Stafford coming back from injury, even with Cooper Kupp coming back from injury, I still think the Rams they have a step on the Arizona Cardinals and where they're at right now as a franchise. But I think it's clear cut. The 49ers are the team to beat. They are a Super Bowl contender, you know, with Brock Purdy, Arizona native out there, starting at quarterback for them. And then I think the Seattle Seahawks could surprise a lot of teams this year if, you know, obviously a lot hinges on whether or not Geno Smith is able to play at a consistent level similar to what he had last season. But I think that the Rams, despite having so much youth, I believe it's 40% of the roster right now is rookies or undrafted free agents, people who are within their first or second seasons. I think that, you know, with the experience that Sean McVay has and the fact, again, that you have Matthew Stafford at quarterback, you're bringing back Cooper Kupp. I think if they can stay healthy and if the offensive line can stay consistent, they could be one of those teams that's frisky and, you know, maybe, you know, knocks a team or two down and spoils their season potentially. But I still think that the pecking order is pretty clear cut as far as, you know, the NFC West is going to shape out going into the season.
When I say Arizona Cardinals or you see the Arizona Cardinal logo, what do you think?
The New Jerseys.
Well played. I like that. Good.
But, seriously, I just don't know what to make of, you know, their direction right now, right? Like, I know that they have the franchise quarterback in Kyler Murray. Is there a commitment there? Is there a long-term commitment? Is, you know, how is the draft going to shape up? You know, right now, I believe Vegas odds have them and the Buccaneers as having the worst chances, or excuse me, in terms of win totals. I think they are the lowest on the totem pole as far as, like, I think it's 5.5 games that they're expected to win this year. And that's without Kyler Murray. I don't know when he's going to come back. And so I'm curious, you know, again, it's really early in Jonathan Gannon's tenure. This is his first season as a head coach. I think that there should be some grace extended. But at the same time, I think it's fair if you're an Arizona Cardinals fan to sit here and wonder, like, what is our direction as a franchise? Because I still don't know whether there's a clear commitment to Kyler or if there's an eye towards the draft. The way that the Cardinals have set themselves up going into 2024, there's a potential that they could be in the running for a Drake May or a Caleb Williams if one of those two are available at quarterback, you know, early in the draft. And so I don't know. It's hard to make sense of where the Cardinals are going because there's still so much in flux and there's so much newness within the franchise, even from out here.
It's really interesting, Kalen, because the Cardinals have 11 picks next year. And I think Monty Austin Ford has come in and done a good job so far of just turning this thing around, turning this thing over. But that's 11 picks, and they have the Texans, so they could conceivably have 1 and 2. If you decide that Kyler Murray is not part of the equation, Kyler Murray would bring back a King's Ransom. So you conceivably could have a boatload more of picks than just the 11 that they already have. Your point about Kyler and the commitment, very fair, but I like the general manager. That's one of the few things I look at and say, all right, can Michael just stay out of the way? Can Michael just not be anywhere near the team? I don't know if Jonathan Gannon's going to be a good head coach. He hasn't coached in a real NFL game yet. We don't know what it's going to be like when there's adversity. He's sitting there trying to roll out Colt McCoy and Joshua Dobbs. That's probably going to lead to your head getting kicked in. When they open up against the Cowboys at home, they open at Washington. But when they come back home, they have the Cowboys. That's going to be a Cowboy convention. Like 95% of that stadium is going to be Dallas Cowboy fans. How are players going to react to all that stuff? So I guess my rant here into the question part of it is, do you feel like that the leadership over here is going in the right direction? I happen to believe so. What about you?
I think so. I'm still curious over the hiring of Gannon. Like I said, I think giving him a year or two or three, maybe, like, seeing how everything shapes up with him. But I do like what Monty Austin Ford has done so far as far as, like, accumulating picks. I know that he had his scout out there to go see USC versus San Jose State. So there's potential, again, for Caleb Williams are doing their homework, at least as far as, you know, getting prepared for the opportunity to potentially take, you know, a quarterback at the number one pick if they were to go that route. And it would make a lot of sense. That's, you know, again, a lot of teams are capitalizing on young superstar quarterbacks on rookie contracts. We just saw it last season with Jalen Hurts. We've seen it in the past with Patrick Mahomes and tons of other quarterbacks. I believe literally the past 7 Super Bowls, there has been at least one quarterback who has been on a rookie contract while we're there. So if you're looking for a ray of hope, Cardinals fans, I mean, if they were to move on from Kyler Murray, of course, that's a big if. You know, there's some potential for everything to turn around down the road. But yeah, like you said, Monty has done a good job in terms of getting some, you know, stability. I still am questioning, like, the direction. I think it's good to have foundation, but now it's like, okay, what is going to be the next step as a franchise for them? And it's not an easy place to cut it.
So people go to the messenger and they look for Kalen Jones. What is your first piece of content going to be? Do you know yet?
Oh, I, I did some stuff like during my welcome week. So I know that there's a review of the first episode of Hard Knocks, but coming up.
Yeah.
Coming up. I do have a piece that'll be running this week on Caleb Williams. So there you go, Cardinals fans. If you want to get a look into, you know, the life and the ability of a potential quarterback, their potential franchise quarterback, definitely check that out.
Good stuff. Kalen Jones, The Messenger. Make sure you check it out. Thanks
for having me, Brad.